the chapter of faith probably expresses faith, I believe, clearer than anything else in the Bible. Let's first read, we're going to need to read the whole chapter, I think, from 1 to 40. So we'll begin at verse 1, Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. By faith Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it he, being dead, still speaks. By faith Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death, and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. By faith, Abraham, being obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs, with whom him the same promise. For he waited for the city which was foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed. She bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky, in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country which they had come out, they would have opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, In Isaac your seed shall be called, concluding that God was able to raise him up, even from the dead, and from which he also received him in a figurative sense. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. By faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. By faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's command. And by faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing of pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. And by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. and by faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians attempted to do so were drowned. By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. By faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe, when she had received the spies with peace. And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, and of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the enemies and the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, afflicted, and tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God, having provided something better for us, that they would not be made perfect apart from us. So there's a lot there. It's all right reading this, but does it tell me what faith is? First it says faith is substance. So what substance? The word faith occurs only twice in the Old Testament, and I want you to look at it with me. The first one is Deuteronomy 32 and verse 20. Oh, sorry, 32 and verse 20. And he said, I will hide my face from them. I will see what their end will be. For they are a perverse generation, a children in whom is no faith. So that's the first one. And that word faith there, uses the Hebrew word emun. So I want you to remember that. And we're going to move to the next one, which is Habakkuk 2 and verse 4. It says, behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. Now that word faith there is emunah, the Hebrew word. In the latter of these two, both the American Standard and the English Revised Standard, all the traditional word faithfulness. So we see that faith means faithfulness. And in the Greek versions, and the transliteration is pistis, that's the Greek word, which gives us the same word as the Septuagint uses, the word in the passive sense, which becomes fidelity, while the classical Greek uses the word in the active sense, which gives us the word trust. So faith is not believing for the unbelievable. In this context, faith means faithfulness, fidelity, and this gives confidence or substance to your belief. Now there's a lot of churches around today which would try to make you believe that you haven't got any faith if you're not leaping around, waving your arms in the air, speaking in tongues or doing all sorts of things. But they have nothing to do with the faith according to the scriptures. And it's important to notice, in fact we had in Manchester where I live, we had a mission to Manchester a few months ago, and I went to one of the meetings for the intercessory prayer groups, and there I was told by one of the leaders that what they were going to do, I went for the full intentions of praying to be honest, but what they were going to do was all gather on the M60 and drive round it 7 times, blowing a shofar. So I said, well, excuse me, what's this got to do with believing and prayer and faith. And they all looked at me funny. This has nothing to do, it's not biblical, and it has nothing to do with the faith that the Bible talks about. So faith is not believing for the unbelievable. Some people think they have to believe to build a fantastic church and all this sort of stuff. It's nothing to do with what faith is all about. It's not believing for the unbelievable. In this context, it means faithfulness. In the first instance, it's faithfulness to God. And in the second instance, it's faithfulness to your brothers and sisters in the flock. To hold the fort, the light, to keep the light and the salt where you are. And that's the same. You always find there's little groups of ladies in some of these churches. And it seems, unfortunately, that it is ladies more often than men that hold these little churches together simply by their persistence. Even when they get down to four or five, it's tragic to see the place falling apart when everybody else has lost out and left because it isn't moving according to their agenda. When God calls you to hold the fort and to hold the faith, he means hold the light in that place, and you will be replenished as a fellowship in that time. So the faith of the patriarchs, illustrated by Abraham and Moses, etc., here, simply is a reliance on God, who is utterly trustworthy. This reliance enables the believer to treat the future as present and the invisible as seen. True Bible faith is not blind optimism or manufactured hope-so feelings. Neither is it an intellectual assent to a doctrine. Nor is it believing in spite of evidence, for that would be superstition. So what this chapter is teaching is the best way to grow faith is to walk with the faithful. That is why we are given a list of the faithful here in this chapter. So we can spot them in our church. Look, in any of your churches, wherever you go, you'll always find, as I've just said, that little core that will stay there through thick and thin. Whatever comes upon them, they'll stay there. This fellowship started off by a couple of people who started and with the vision and continue to go on holding that vision. I've seen the place filled and I've seen it down to six. But the same people are holding the fort, shining the light for Jesus right here where we are. And it doesn't matter whether we've got a citadel with flashing lights outside or anything else. It matters that you're holding the fort where God has placed you. We have a saying in Yorkshire, it says, when in doubt, do nout. So what the chapter is teaching is the best way to grow faith, as I've said, is to walk with the faithful. That is why we are given a list of faithful, so we can spot them. Faith does not mean that you won't fail. Rather, it means that you will sometimes fail, but will keep fidelity to God, and God will lift you out of your failings. That's the important thing. You need to see that. And some of you who may be new believers need to see that clearly. That every one of us here has failed. And from some of us who have been here many years in the Lord, and some of us who have just come, we're still all failures. It's Christ who lifts us up and causes us to succeed. Running away changes nothing. There's only one real failure, and that's when you get knocked down and you fail to get up. If you don't want to get up, then you're the failure, because God will always come and support you and lift you up, despite whatever situation you might find yourself in. This is what some people have said about faith. I just wrote down a few sayings that some people said. Feed your faith and your doubts will starve to death. I like that. You probably heard of the great evangelist John Wesley, many of you. Well, John Wesley wasn't always a great evangelist. When he first went out as a missionary, he went to America to try and preach to the Indians, American Indians. And he came back heartbroken. And he was on a boat. And as he was coming back, him and his brother, he stood on the deck during a storm. And he was crying to God, wondering what his next step was going to be. And he met a guy called Peter Bowler. Now, Peter Bowler was a Moravian Christian. And if you look at church history, the Moravians were the greatest evangelists Europe's probably ever seen. Fantastic group of people. And Peter Bowler heard Wesley's story, and this is what he said to him. He said, "Live by faith till you have it. Then because you have it, you'll preach it." And it's quite interesting. If you walk with the faithful till you have it, and you've got what they've got, then you'll be able to share it. That's what he's saying. American literalist, Ralph Waldo Emerson. "All I have seen leads me to trust the Creator for all I have not seen." Interesting, these, aren't they? And another literalist, Stephen Gord, says, "The school of faith teaches us to trust God to solve our problems. The graduate course just teaches us to trust God when he chooses not to solve our problems." And of course, the great evangelist D.L. Moody said this, "A little faith will bring your soul to heaven, but a lot of faith will bring heaven to your soul." Walking with the faithful, continuing to come to church, fellowship, whatever it is you have, is what builds you up and what strengthens you in God. And it makes you stronger and enables you to become the man or woman of God that you aspire to be, that God called you to be. Now, David says some things about this, and I thought we'd turn to them, to Psalm 37. I just want to read the first seven verses, because I think he captures it, the spiritual growth period in this seven verses. He says, "Do not fret because of evildoers." This is Psalm 37 and verse 1. "Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass, and whether as the green heap." Herb. Then he says, "Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart." Verse 5, "Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring you to pass. He shall bring forth your righteousness as the light, and your justice as the noonday." Verse 7. "Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in the way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass." So there we have three positions. Trust in the Lord, commit your way to the Lord, and rest in the Lord. Now I believe, as I've said, that I think they give us a little picture of the walk of faith. So first we start off with trust in the Lord, which you'll find is verse 3 in the psalm. This is like when you first find the Lord and you first find your salvation, your new birth brings you to life, and you're bubbling over and you want to tell everybody about it. It's a courtship. You court the Lord, you do all you can. It means we have to first get acquainted with him. We've got to make that time in the beginning to get acquainted with him. Learn his ways. Allow him to teach us through every day of experiences that we have. As you please him, he will bless you, and you will find your parameters in his presence. And this is what Paul calls the width and length and depth and height of God in Ephesians 3:18. You know, when Abraham walked out, when he met God, and God sent him out to get the promised land, he said, "Go to the length of it, the depth of it, and the width of it." You've got to find the parameters in God in that manner. What he allows you to do, the Holy Spirit, and what he doesn't allow you to do. You need to find that. And you do that in your early stages, hopefully. Some people are doing that 20 years on, unfortunately, but that's often not their fault. It's usually that in a church where there's bad teaching or all sorts of things. But in the second stage, I would say, we'll find there in verse 5, is having been walking with him for a while, we'll get to the section that says, "Commit your way to the Lord." So you're relying on him now. You've started to do that. This means that you come to a place of surrender. Your agenda doesn't matter. His agenda matters. It's like John the Baptist said, wasn't it? I must decrease and he must increase. Having tasted that the Lord is good, give all your troubles to him and he will direct your paths. Verse 6. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light. That's his purpose. His purpose is to bring you your righteousness into the light. And once you have arrived at this place in God, you don't moan about your circumstances. Why? Because you're aware that he is in control. You see, at the end of the day, he's either almighty or he isn't. He either knows everything about your life or you haven't put your trust in the same God you thought you had. So you can relax in his presence. You can allow him to direct you in your paths. And then when you get an old stage in, you've been going a while, you can say the final position is rest in the Lord. This means that you don't move without his say-so. Your will is not important. His will is all that matters because you have learned to rest in him. Some people are always going here, there and everywhere. They feel almost, they're not Christians if they don't do something. We need to learn to rest in him and let him direct us. Those people will wear themselves out, and when they've stopped, God will then begin to work. This is the same faith that Enoch had, and he believed God would take him off the earth, and he did. Noah by faith built the ark and was one of the few that survived the old world system. And we read also here about Abraham. He went to a country he knew not, but it was enough that he knew that God knew. Sarah had a child, even though she knew she was barren, but she trusted in God. You see, that's the bottom line. Do you really trust in God? And do you trust Jesus to bring you to that place that you know you should be at but can't reach? Moses left Egypt and all its riches to live in the desert because he knew God was mightier than the king of Egypt and would make provision for him. Joshua brought down the walls of Jericho because he learned to obey God. Not because he was a mighty man. Hebrews 11 informs us that the just shall live by their faith. And by every word that comes from the mouth of God. And we trust in his guidance for that. So the writer to the Hebrews was giving us an inkling that all the examples he gives in this chapter, that if we remain faithful, he will bring us to his kingdom. That's a promise. And he's never let anybody down yet. If we remain faithful, he will help us to rest in him. He will bring us to all those stages I've mentioned in our growth structure. But we have to remain faithful to him. Sometimes that can be difficult for some of us. Some of us have difficult backgrounds to go home to. Many women I've met and had the counsel have got husbands that don't agree with them going to church, don't agree with them following the Lord, or families that are unsure about it and give them a terrible amount of pressure and they come anyway. And it costs them a lot. This is never more true for anybody than it is for Jewish people. Families are against them. Difficulty comes about upon them, but they have to trust in the Lord. And he will show them. When I first came to the Lord, 29 years or something ago now, I was looked upon as some sort of weirdo. It got around that I'd become a monk. I don't know where they got that from. But I was beginning to tell my mum and dad and everybody all about how wonderful Jesus was, how he'd changed my life. And they looked at me as though I had a tie loose. And for ages, I read in the book of Daniel about how Daniel fasted and prayed. And I thought, right, I'm going to start fasting and praying for my family. I had such a clear sense of hell and my family going to hell. that it worried me so much, I went into fasting and praying. And I did this invariably for long periods of time for about a year. And after a year, my mother and father both came to know the Lord. You see, he is faithful. He is utterly faithful. You can trust him in anything and with everything. My father was a communist. He'd been to communist school and everything. My mother had been involved in all sorts of things. She'd well left the faith of our fathers and was involved in all sorts of things. But when they saw the light, when they saw the truth, they knew where to go and they followed that light. And she's gone to be with the Lord now, and she had a glorious, abundant entrance into the kingdom of God. And even in her final years, she was 10 years bedridden in her final years. And when she went into hospital, they used to say she was like a breath of spring air. The Lord just bubbled out of her wherever she went. Prior to going in hospital and being laid up in bed, she was in a wheelchair. And she used to get my dad to wheel her down to the Arndale Centre, and he'd leave her there along the seats, and all the tramps and that would come and sit down and moan at her. And she'd open her Bible and tell them about Jesus. This was a lady that knew and found God because she'd learned to rest in him. And even a troublesome body wasn't enough to put her off talking about him. Those who are faithful rest in him and understand that he has all the answers. If we remain faithful, he will help us to rest in him. If we remain faithful, he will cause us to live in his peace, his shalom peace. That year, the end of that year, was only the beginning of a revival in my family. You only look an oddball for a determined period of time, because people are watching your life. Saying you're a Christian and telling them all you're a Christian is only the first stage. The real thing is when you've got to live it afterwards. Anybody can tell you what you are, it's living it. And that really takes a bit of effort. But if you're in love with Jesus, it's no effort at all. If you fall in love with God, it's no effort at all. You just hold on to his garment, like that lady did with the issue of blood. She held on to his garment, and he will see you through. And all my family have come to the Lord now. And I'm not the egg ball. I'm not the oddball anymore. In fact, at my wedding, my Uncle John found the Lord, and he was in the Church of England Synod. Holding the fort for God, being faithful where he's put you, living and walking with the faithful, that's what keeps you going. That's what strengthens you. And I trust God will help you to receive what I've shared tonight.